The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org. Welcome to the Free Library. My name is Andy Cahan. I'm Director of Author Events, and I'm very pleased to welcome our guest this evening. It's taken about 12 years to get him here. We're patient, though. Dr. Deepak Chopra was born and raised in India and came to the United States in 1970 to train and practice internal medicine and endocrinology. He has since developed his own philosophy of wellness that combines Ayurvedic healing with Western medicine and focuses on a balance between mind, body, and spirit. Astonishingly, Dr. Chopra is the author of 75 books that have been translated into over 85 languages. 25 of those books have been New York Times bestsellers, and I think that the number is about to jump by one tonight. Dr. Chopra is a fellow of the American College of Physicians, a member of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, and senior scientist with the Gallup Organization. Time magazine calls Deepak Chopra one of the top 100 heroes and icons of the century and credits him as the prophet poet of alternative medicine. Tonight, he joins us to present his distillation of a lifetime's worth of observations and apply them to the issue of weight loss. He is a warm and luminous presence. I think you'll enjoy him. Please welcome Deepak Chopra.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here. Thank you for being here. So I was deciding, should I talk about the book? Do you want me to talk about the book or the meaning of life? we can kind of put the book somewhere there, right? So about a year ago, I was traveling the country speaking about how human beings have thought about the meaning of life. That was a book called God, A Story of Revelation. Starts with the Old Testament and ends with Einstein. How people have wondered about who we are, do we have a soul, what is the meaning of death, does God exist, all of that. So I arrived in Los Angeles and my son picked me up with my then 5-year-old grandson. We call him Krishu, short for Christian. Some people call him Christian, but that's how it is in the US. So when they picked me up, little Krishu turned to me and he said, Dada, which is Indian for grandfather, he said, what is dark energy? 5-year-old kid, huh? So I said, what do you know about dark energy? And he said, it flows through the night sky. It's a beautiful description. I said, what else do you know? He said, it's 70% of the universe. Now, how many of you knew that? So I'm wondering who this kid is. As we get out of the airport and we're driving in Los Angeles and I roll the window down and we can see the ocean. And he looks at me and he says, how did they make the ocean? I said, how did who make the ocean? He said, they. I said, no, you got to be specific. When you say they, who do you mean? So he thought for a bit, and then he reframed the question. He said, how did the ocean get made? So I said, well, it got made the way the earth got made. It's a piece of rock, and it fell off a big star. And there are several of those now. We call it the solar system. And then I said, do you know how many planets there are in the solar system? He said, well, if you count Pluto, there are 9. So I said, and where did the solar system come from? He said, from the galaxy. I said, yeah. And do you know the name of our galaxy? He said, Milky Way. I said, yeah, that's pretty good. Where did that come from? He says, from the other galaxies. I said, yeah. And where did they come from? And he says, from the universe. I said, that's good. And where did the universe come from? He said, from another dimension. Now, the reason I tell you this is 30 years of my thinking. And he kind of summarizes it in 2 minutes. So, you know, I'm from India. I'm thinking, who is this kid? Is he, you know, we think reincarnation and all that. So I'm thinking Galileo and Einstein. So I said, how do you know all this? He said, it's on my Pokemon. So, well, if you don't know what Pokemon is, and then you're not part of the collective conversation, and forget about the meaning of life. Well, this story is interesting for many reasons, okay? And it has something to do with our topic too tonight, although I'm getting at it very indirectly. Right now, the two open questions in science, open means for which there are no answers, the two most fundamental questions in science for which there are no answers whatever. The first is, what's the stuff of the universe? So what is it made up of? And this is what we know. Short answer, we don't know. Okay? Long answer, 70%, as my grandson said, is dark energy. And we have no idea what it is. It's expanding the distance between galaxies right this moment faster than the speed of light. And therefore, what we call the cosmic horizon, which is the furthest we know that exists from where we are, is about 47 billion light years away from where we are right now. 47 billion light years means that it would take light 47 billion years from to come from there to here, which means what's across that is not only unknown, it's unknowable. Galaxies are tumbling into the unknowable even as we speak. And by the time light gets from there to here, our galaxy will have disappeared. It will have burnt itself up into the heat death of absolute zero. 70%. 26% almost is dark matter, which is called dark matter because it's invisible. It's not atomic. It cannot emit light, radiate light, reflect light. So we can't interact with it, you know, because everything we know is atoms. Like this is microphone is atoms. Your body is made up of atoms. But we can't interact with this stuff. Why do we call it matter? Well, because it bends gravity in the same way as regular matter does. It bends space-time the same way as regular matter does. So it's most of the gravity in the universe. Without this dark matter, which we have no idea what it is, we may never, because we can't interact with it, the galaxies wouldn't exist, which means no solar system, which means no you and me. That's 96% of the universe. Of the remaining 4%, 99.9% is invisible interstellar dust. So the visible universe is 0.01% of all that exists. 0.01%. That's all the stars, all the galaxies, all the planets, that we can think of. Trillions of planets, billions, and as Carl Sagan would say, billions, billions, billions of stars. That's 0.01%. That's atomic. But the problem is, even the atomic universe is actually not material, right? Because when you look at atoms, they're made up of subatomic particles, and particles are waves also. They have no units of mass and energy. So what's the stuff of the universe? Non-stuff. That's the first open question in science. We know it's non-stuff. Now what we have to figure out, what kind of non-stuff? Second question is, what is consciousness? What is sentience? What is awareness? You know, you and I are aware beings. You're aware that you exist. You're aware that I probably exist too. And we are all aware that there's something called the universe, even though we don't know what the stuff is. So that's awareness, consciousness, sentience, whatever you want to call it. And we don't know what that is and where that comes from. Two most important questions of our existence. What is existence? And how come we are aware that there is existence? No answers in science. And believe me, if you don't, Google it. Just Google open questions in science. And there's an issue of it in the magazine Science 2009. Everybody agrees that we don't know what existence is scientifically, and we don't know what awareness of existence is. Well, what else is important, right? What's there, and how come we exist too? And we know that it's there. So this leads us to some very interesting speculations that are occurring in the world of science right now. I was speaking to Andy before I got in, and we were talking about Freeman Dyson, who is an amazing scientist at Princeton, close by. He's now 90 years old, won the Templeton Prize for Religion and Science. And he says that the whole universe is like a mind, that the stuff of the universe is mind stuff. And he's not the only one. John Wheeler said that, and many others, many great scientists, you know. Sir Arthur Eddington, one of the most famous astrophysicists of the last century, he said, something unknown is doing we don't know what. And then he also said that, you know, the universe is more mind-like than machine-like. Another great Nobel Prize-winning scientist said the universe starts to look more like a big thought than a big machine. So here's what some people are saying, and I kind of am in alignment with them, that when we start to look at everything in the universe, we see there's sentience everywhere. Sentience means awareness, okay? Consciousness. And by that, don't have to be very complicated. Everything in the universe responds to information, processes information, and then expresses its autonomy. That's true of everything that's living, okay? So you can take a bacterium, you can take a paramecium, you can take an animal, you can take us. We don't behave mechanically. You know, we respond to information, we process it, and then we have what is called biological autonomy. And that's true of the Earth itself. The Earth is a living organism. The more people look at the Earth, they see that it's an ecosystem. And the ecosystem is in perfect balance till we, of course, mess it up with fracking and climate change or whatever. But by itself, the ecosystem is totally in balance, as is the entire universe, you know, because it takes all of that gravity, it takes all of that dark energy, it takes all of that invisible stuff to make the visible stuff, which is just like little sprinkling over the invisible. So, principle number one, there is aliveness, consciousness, sentience, awareness everywhere. Principle number two, the visible and the non-visible go together. In fact, most of the universe is invisible, as I just mentioned to you. But without the invisible, there wouldn't be any visible. So this is a principle that was first kind of hinted by in the early part of the last century when people were saying, is fundamental reality a wave or a particle? Okay, a wave has no location. It's everywhere. A particle has a location. A wave has no mass or energy. A particle has mass or energy. So wave is invisible. Particle is visible. So everything, there is its opposite, complementarity. And they're probably the same thing, depending on how we're looking at it. A wave and a particle, mind and matter, biological organism, universe. They're complementarities. That's the second principle. The third principle is everything in nature is self-organizing. It organizes by itself and it regulates by itself. In our own body, we call that homeostasis. When you go to medical school, that's the first thing you learn. That when we have balance, it's called homeostasis. Homeostasis means self-regulation. It's also self-organization. Your blood sugar remains in a certain range, cholesterol, blood pressure, immune function, hormone levels, temperature. That's all self-regulated. The human body has about 600 trillion cells, which is more than all the stars in the Milky Way galaxy. By the way, of those, only 6 trillion are human. The rest are bacteria. So you are a walking bacterial colony with a few human cells tagged along. But whatever that is, that ecosystem, it's self-organizing, it's self-regulating. Right now, those 600 trillion cells are doing so many things. A human body can think thoughts, play a piano, kill germs, remove toxins, make a baby all at the same time. And while the body is capable of doing that, your body tracks the movements of stars and planets because your biological rhythms are the symphony of the whole universe. So there's something, we have biological rhythms. When they disrupt, we say, I have jet lag or I'm feeling out of season. Why? Because there's a symphony going on. It's the movement of stars, planets, it's the circadian rhythms, the seasonal rhythms, the tidal rhythms that all play themselves out in our biology. In other words, we dance to a cosmic music even though we can't name the tune. But our body dances to it, okay? Because it's part of the universe. The microcosm is part of the universe. Your body is in fact made up of stardust. The carbon, the hydrogen, the oxygen, the nitrogen of your body was manufactured in the crucible of these stars that are held together, cradled literally by dark energy and dark matter, the invisible stuff. So there's self-regulation, there's self-organization, there's sentience, there's complementarity, and finally there's evolution. In that we, as living organisms, are constantly evolving. And that evolution is in the direction of complexity, but also in the direction of creativity and self-awareness. We are the only beings, as far as I know, that worry about death, think of the future, remember the past, and conceptualize all this. And so we have self-awareness. And this is now the key to our evolution. Because evolution is no longer random mutations and natural selection. Evolution is through culture and self-awareness. It's an amazing thing. So the more you're aware of yourself, the more you have insight into who you are. Intuition, insight, imagination, creativity, free will, choice. These are things that we have as human beings. That, you know, bananas don't have that. Even though 65% of your DNA is the same as a banana. Okay, 82% of your DNA is the same as a mouse. 98% of your DNA is the same as a chimpanzee. So something really is going on, right? And so you say, well, what does this have to do with weight loss and feeling good or whatever? And what happened is I was actually writing a book, and I'm still doing it with my friend Rudy Tanzi, who's the head of genetics at Harvard Medical School, and he's also the head of neuroscience. We did a book together called Superbrain. But then I went to this conference that President Clinton had called Health Matters, and I was supposed to lead a meditation there. And President Clinton made the remark that obesity and type 2 diabetes is going to be the greatest disaster for the United States. That it's directly related to heart disease, many types of cancer, inflammation, autoimmune illnesses, infections, kidney disease, blindness. The commonest cause of blindness is kidney disease. The commonest cause of that is diabetes. And so we're in a very strange situation. Half the world is hungry and half the world is malnourished because of too much of the wrong thing. And so, you know, I thought to myself, if there was a diet that really worked, we would know by now what it is. Right? Every season there's so many diet books and they all work for a while and then they don't work because people gain back the weight. So I decided to go back to a very fundamental idea, and that's how the name of this book came about. I was walking with a PBS producer in Manhattan, and this book is going to be a PBS special starting after Thanksgiving. And I said to him, you know, my mother used to say that people put food in their body only for two reasons. One is they're hungry for food, and the second is they're hungry for something else. Okay, you cannot fill an emotional hunger with physical food. And it starts very early in our lives, at least in this culture. It starts, baby's crying because baby wants to be picked up, given a kiss or hugged, and the mother is busy, so she puts a bottle in the mouth or gives something to eat, and the baby's little brain starts to associate that emotional hunger with physical food. And then, of course, we have other kinds of hunger for meaning and purpose, for creative expression, for lightness of being, for getting in touch with our soul. So I thought, you know, why not do something that is very practical about feeding our food with healthy, nourishing, alive, rich in nutrients, rich in color, rich in taste, food that you find in all great traditions. Italian food, Mexican food, Chinese food, Korean, name it, Indian. Traditionally, food was very rich in color and taste and smell. It was inviting. And what do we have now? We have French fries, ketchup, hamburgers, and a Coke. And so those three addictive substances, sweet, sour, salt, and fat, and, you know, manufactured food, actually, people, scientists are hired how to make it addictive. And of course, manufactured food also has hormones, antibiotics, chemicals, petroleum products. You wouldn't feed that thing to an insect. And we're doing it to ourselves. So I decided to focus on healthy food and the body, and then also address emotions and spirituality in this book. And, you know, in a way, it's a complement to the last book, Superbrain. If you look at the brain, your brain, this would be what your brain looks like. This would be a handy model of the brain. This is your spinal cord. This is your reptilian brain. Reptilian brain, because it's found in reptiles. I remember when we were in medical school, the way we remember the functions of this part of the brain were the four Fs: feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. Okay. So this is the brain. We get into trouble with this brain. When we react to situations, circumstances, events, and people without stopping. And so I came up with this formula, STOP, S-T-O-P. So every time you're stressed, reactive, or putting food in your body carelessly, you stop. In fact, I have a band now, which we're going to give out on the PBS show. It's called What Are You Hungry For? So you just look at this, and you stop. S stands for stop. T stands for take 3 deep breaths and smile. O, observe your body and observe the situation. And P, proceed with awareness. You just stop the reflex. You override your reptilian brain, which is not serving you anymore. Okay? Then this part, if I open my hand, this is my emotional brain, limbic brain. When we are feeling connected with the ecosystem, because really that's who we are. We are a speck of awareness, a speck of consciousness in an ecosystem. Our body is an ecosystem. Okay, all those bacteria, they're hanging there together as an ecosystem. And the 6 trillion cells, they're part of an ecosystem. But then we are an ecosystem with each other, with our family, with our friends, with our communities, with our social networks, with our professional colleagues. So when we are connected with them, then the ecosystem is functioning in a healthy manner. And we connect through love and kindness and joy and compassion and empathy and equanimity. If you're feeling resentful or angry or hostility or guilt or shame or depression, then we disconnect. And when we disconnect, homeostasis goes out of whack. Self-regulation does not occur. And so in 1980, I think, there was a paper in the journal Science, very interesting, where scientists were feeding rabbits a diet that was extremely high in cholesterol. But these rabbits did not get the high cholesterol levels, nor did they get the hardening of the arteries that they were supposed to get because they were being fed high cholesterol. So what happened? Well, after a lot of investigation, the researchers found that the technician who was feeding these rabbits, instead of throwing the food at them, he would take them out of their cages and he would pet them and cuddle them and then give them the same poisonous food. But now they made different peptides, neurochemicals in their brain that transferred the cholesterol into a completely different metabolic pathway, making the crucial difference between life and death from the number one epidemic of our time. So it's not just what you eat. It's important what you eat, but what's the mood when you eat? If you're upset and angry and hostile, you'll make lots of adrenaline and cortisol that'll shunt the food into a toxic metabolic pathway. So mindful eating, enjoying your food, noticing the color, noticing the taste, the smell, the variety, the ethnicity of the food and where it comes from has an effect on how the food is metabolized in your body. So in the book I talk about the colors of the rainbow and the smells and the taste that create for healthy phytochemicals. Phytochemicals means chemicals that come from the energy of the sun that are high in antioxidants and anti-inflammatory things and anti-carcinogenic. Talk about the limbic brain, how it affects the food, and finally talk about how our self-awareness means, self-awareness literally means awareness of your true self, not your ego self, your unconditioned self. So right now as you're listening to me, listening, right? So just for a second, turn your attention to who's listening. That still presence that you feel, that's your soul. It's not your mind which might be saying, I wish I'd gone to the bathroom before the lecture. Or... and that's a conversation. That's your mind that speaks in the presence of your soul. Your soul is unconditioned. It's a field of infinite possibilities. It's a field from where your creativity comes. It's the field from where your intentions are powerful. It's the field of synchronicity. All that's happening in your body right now is being orchestrated by this core consciousness, which spiritual traditions have called the soul. So really, that's what the book is about. It's about feeding your body with nourishing food, alive, not contaminated. It's about feeding your heart with love and joy and compassion and equanimity and empathy. It's feeding your mind with knowledge, self-reflection, maybe even wisdom, and ultimately feeding your soul with the lightness of your being. And therefore, it's not a diet book, okay? Because in my opinion, diets don't work. I am happy to take questions now. What time is it? What's our perception of time? Change. Huh? Huh? I can take questions? So we can pass the microphone around. Anybody want to ask a question? Over there, can you give that lady the microphone?
Good evening.
Hi.
It's great to be here and great to hear you.
Thank you.
So when you're trying to exist in a peaceful place in your life and trying to embrace things that bring you happiness and bring you joy, but then you're trying to stay part of your greater ecosystem, meaning your family, how do you maintain that peacefulness?
Okay, good question and very frequently asked question. Here's what you should realize. You cannot change another person. You shouldn't even try. It's hard enough for you to change yourself. Okay, so expecting other people to change, to make you feel better, you'll be waiting a long time. We have to be the change we want to see in the world. And we have to hang out with people who are doing that. We find our own, create our own ecosystem, and then let you be the example for the ecosystem that is dysfunctional. Okay, that's the only way. Mahatma Gandhi used to say, can you be the change you want to see in the world? Now, having said that, how many people are aware of the 21-day meditation experience that we're doing right now? So just for your information, thank you, those who raised their hands. There are now 700,000 people joining us across the world every day. So you want to change the ecosystem? Come to, and you won't forget this, and you'll start tonight. Come to ChopraCenterMeditation.com, free. Okay, and it's not too late to join, ChopraCenterMeditation.com, and we will give you a 21 days of experience free of charge, and you'll be joining 700,000, and Oprah wants it to go to 1 million, so you can help her and help me, and we'll create the ecosystem globally through our social networks, ChopraCenterMeditation.com. You can even do it on your iPhone or Android and have the experience. Yes, microphone.
Well, I'm one of the people that have been following that program. This is my second time, and I want to just acknowledge you for that and Oprah and tell you how marvelous it is.
Well, thank you. Without you, we wouldn't have it.
So I encourage everybody, if they haven't signed up, to do that. And I'm just used to hearing your voice late at night because I have you on my iPad, and I listen to you. You're the last voice I hear before I go to sleep. So this is new for me. The light is on because I turned my iPad on to
okay.
A very, very, to a very dim light, and I listen to your
beautiful
voice. And I love the meditation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Next question, please. Thank you. Over there, the gentleman there.
I love the idea that you can actually change the pathway of the food by having the right intention. Would that
yes.
be a good way of saying it? Have you actually done an experiment with human beings with this?
The experiment I mentioned was with rabbits, but you
yes.
know what people have noticed is that in places like Italy or even Spain, but Mediterranean countries, eating is a celebration, okay? People don't eat carelessly. They don't eat while driving a car. They're not gobbling a sandwich and speaking on Bluetooth and driving at the same time. It's a big deal, you know, to have a meal in Italy where there's a lot of camaraderie, there's a lot of conviviality, there's a lot of celebration, there's a good mood. And what people have studied, not experiment, but what we call epidemiological studies, that the food is good, but, you know, it's the atmosphere around which the food is eaten and the emotions that flow then influence how the food is metabolized.
But no actual experiment.
No experiment, no. Demographic studies. What are called epidemiological studies. It would be a good study to do in human beings. Yes. The gentleman, yeah.
Question I have is, does your grandson have an agent?
Say that again?
Does your grandson have an agent?
What did he say? My grandson is now is 6 years. He doesn't have an agent, but this kid is not exceptionally brilliant. It's just the way that the environment is very supportive. His mother, when they visit New York, has been taking him since he was 2 years to the Museum of Natural History. So he can name all the dinosaurs and all the species. And, he's happier in the Museum of Natural History than he is in Disney World. He says, I love it here. Can we come back here? So it's all how you train the kids. You know, it's not all kids are. You know, what Tagore used to say, every child that is born is proof that God has not yet given up on human beings. Yes. Then we have to go the other side. Okay. Yes, sir.
Gluten and celiac have suddenly become prominent words in our lexicon.
Gluten?
Gluten and celiac disease.
Oh, yeah. It's no question there's a relationship. Gluten is, I would say, everybody should stop eating gluten immediately. Okay, it's poison for our body. That's why there's a very popular book now called Wheat Belly, I think, and it makes a lot of sense. I talk about that also. Yes, anyone here? Gluten, refined sugar, all the stuff that goes into manufactured food these days, it's terrible for the whole, not only for you, for the whole ecosystem.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for being here.
Thank
you.
Another
opportunity to hear you. History is my major, and 100 years ago, the human beings even couldn't grasp the concept of being able to go over the speed over 100 miles per hour. Now, nowadays, we think about traveling the stars. You and with all your wisdom, can you see how this new eating revolution, thinking revolution will be 50 years from now, how it will brighten our horizons and bring us better things?
Well, for one thing, the technology allows us to actually sense what's happening in the body faster than ever before. So right now I'm wearing 3 biosensors, okay? They tell me everything about my heart rate variability, skin resistance, skin temperature, galvanic skin response, and soon a biosensor that will be measuring brain waves too. We just finished a study with Scripps, with their digital medicine department, where we can instantly measure about 12 things happening in the body that are crucial for well-being when people meditate. And it can be picked up with an iPhone or an Android and transmitted instantly to Scripps, to their supercomputers, and give you feedback immediately. So if you had an argument with your wife last night, it'll show up. And you'll know exactly, because your GPS will tell you where you were and what you were doing in order to have disrupted your body. So personally, I like the technology, okay? Technology is neutral. People can be very distracted by the technology and they can put it away and say, I'll focus on it when I do focus on it. So I like the idea personally. And also this week we are announcing a new program called the Weightless Project, where people who lose weight, the amount of calories that they don't need will go to feed a hungry child in Africa or India or some other place in the world. So we'll create a calorie imprint through the technology, and all these biosensor companies, you know, Jawbone and Fitbit and Basis, they'll sponsor this. And we'll also use that money then to feed people in the disaster in the Philippines and so on. So technology does help us, as long as we recognize that it's up to us how we use it, you know, and not get distracted by it all the time. I also feel that now that we know that our brain can get rewired, we can use social networks to create healthier brains by helping each other find creative solutions. I see 50 years from now a completely different human species, you know, that we'll actually be seeding other planets with biospheres. We'll create the bio-atmosphere in other planets. We'll be able to send genomic information there, and we'll be able to seed our planets with life. That's part of our evolution. Gentleman there?
I'm curious to know, how do you feel about the medical profession in all this? I know, like, I can't remember the last time I went to a doctor and they asked me what I ate. So how is that going to...
Yeah, the medical profession needs to change, and I think it will. Here's what I feel, and I'm not making this up. I have good statistics to back this. 80% of the drugs we use, the procedures we do, and the surgeries we do are of optional or marginal benefit, which means if you didn't do them, it wouldn't make a bit of a difference to your life expectancy. Only 2% of people benefit, 2% of people who have stable angina, benefit from bypass or angioplasty. That costs us $300 billion a year of unnecessary surgery. Your doctors are not trained to ask you the right questions about, you know, did you sleep last night? Did you know that if you don't sleep, it disrupts your whole hormonal imbalance in your body, causes disruption in homeostasis, even messes up the hormones that have to do with your appetite? Do you have a happy relationship with your family? Are you stressed? Do you move every day? Simple questions. What do you eat? They don't ask because they're not trained to ask. So we have a huge, you know, our government almost came down because of this healthcare reform thing. It has nothing to do with healthcare. It's insurance reform. We need insurance reform, but it's not going to change whether people get sick or not. Okay? That's something we need to start creating a grassroots. And to make it even worse, there are 28 healthcare lobbyists, not just lobbyists, 28 healthcare lobbyists for every congressman in Washington. So why are they going to change the laws when these guys pay them all the money and they represent the medical industrial complex, the diagnostic equipment, the pharmaceutical? It's not politically correct to say all this because these are very powerful people, but that's the truth. Have a question here?
Yes, I'm the oldest of three girls, and both were obese, ended up with gastric bypass surgery. One got a bad blood transfusion, and she passed away Christmas Eve 09. The other one is trached. And
the other one was?
My other sister is trached and is fighting Staph, Pseudomonas, MRSA, and Serratia at this point right now. We did a story navigating the Medicare maze on Good Morning America. But you're telling the truth. Years ago, I'm a product of the 50s, and we had like an icebox. And then when I got older, then when I moved, they bought this big double-wide refrigerator. We looked in the little box and thought that was what was for the week. They looked in there and thought this was for the week. And it's very hard later on in life. Like me, I'm physically challenged. And yes, the medications and stuff, I haven't eaten all day. I thought about that when you said that. I didn't sleep last night chasing the storm because it was coming this way, and I'm listening to it on TV. And I didn't rest, but I'm like thrown off today because I haven't had this
sleep. So this is where we need to help each other. You know, this is where you need a social support system.
Yeah, I'm going to sign on.
You sign on. And by the way, by next week, we'll have a website called What Are You Hungry For? In our Chopra Center. So go to chopra.com, go to What Are You Hungry For? And we are going to be there 24/7 helping people. Okay, free of charge. This is going to be... We are getting a whole staff to do this. Over here.
Thank you very much. I heard that your son did a movie about you. I'd like to know the name of it so that I can get a copy of it.
I'm not telling. It's an inside look, huh? It's called Decoding Deepak. Over here.
I totally buy into the idea that diets don't work. And I can see that putting your intention out to eat healthfully and whatever can put you on the right path. But what do you do about that negative voice that's constantly chirping in people's brains that wants to subvert the good intention that you put out there, which...
Meditation. Meditation will break the cycle. Okay? Because meditation takes you beyond your conditioned mind. It gets you to a pure mind, the creative mind. It's the only thing I found that helps people break habits, destructive habits. Somebody had their hand up there.
Continuing with your discussion about medicine, I know a lot of people, including myself, that are on the statins for the blood pressure and for cholesterol. So are you saying that we could get off of those with proper diet and intention and exercise?
You know, they called me on CNN day before yesterday because of all this news on the statins. I didn't want to go on the show because I was not comfortable with what I was going to say. Okay, so if you have high cholesterol right now and it's dangerously high, I would say don't stop the statin. But you can bring down your cholesterol, not even through vigorous exercise, just through making a commitment to move all day, to not take the walkway when you go at the airport, to at least climb one or two sets of stairs, to make excuses, to move all day, get sleep, and go on a good diet. Get sleep, very important.
How do you get sleep?
Meditate. I got it. No. And also, the more you're active during the day, the better your sleep will be. Okay? So I'm not going to give you say or stop the statin because, you know, that's would be reckless of me to do that. But I do know that 80% of people. Here's what Rudy told me the other day. Rudy is my friend at Mass General. He said, he's a geneticist, only 5% of disease-related genes are fully penetrant. 95% of your gene activity is based on lifestyle. 95%. Yes, ma'am. Right there at the back.
Hopefully you'll answer my question after I admit I've never slept with you on my iPad at night. Or my iPhone or any other technology. Anyway, talking about food, there's so many children today being born with so many diseases that were not either didn't exist before or were just never discovered until now. Do you think food plays a part in that? And how do you calm these kids down?
Okay, so, you know, I would be remiss if I said I know for sure, okay? And any answer I'm going to give you is going to be intuitive because I don't know the statistical facts. But any doctor will tell you that there's more autism right now than ever before. There's more ADHD, attention deficit disorder, than ever before. And so maybe food has a lot to do with it, but maybe it also has to do with that we're living in a very distracted time. People are very distracted. So what I have done in my life is I do one thing at a time. Your cortical brain cannot do more than one thing at a time. Your reptilian brain can, but your cortical brain cannot. So there's sleep time, there's focus work time, there's mindful eating time, there's exercise time, there's playtime and recreation time, and there's downtime. And there's no way you can compromise on that. If you do compromise, you create a frenetic environment in your family that, you know, children, their neurons mirror the neurons of their parents. Okay, right there. Can you bring the microphone there?
Hi. I was wondering what you know about the heart in relation to the emotions and the heart-brain connection, as well as the connection between people.
Excellent question. Okay. 15 years ago, if somebody had said, what's the heart-brain connection and is the heart, physical heart have anything to do with emotions, people would have said, no. Today we know for sure that your heart is different in its very structure in different emotions because the heart has the same molecules of emotion that the brain makes. So your heart has molecules for dopamine, oxytocin, endorphins, serotonin, all the hormones that are hormones of emotion. If you're feeling angry and upset right now, your heart will be totally different than when you're feeling love or joy or connection with someone. And instantly, it doesn't even take a while. So this is the study we're doing with the digital cardiology department at Scripps, where we're actually testing people's heart activity digitally as when they're experiencing different emotions. Here's one other thing we found is that if you want to break a stress response, all you have to do is put your attention in your heart. Mentally, just put your attention here, and within a few seconds, your heart rate variability will change in a healthy direction. Or what we tell people is put your attention in your heart and just mentally say four words. Peace, harmony, laughter, love. Okay, remember those? Peace, harmony, laughter, love. Put your attention here, mentally say those, and your heart rate activity will change immediately. Great question. And by the way, because our heart waves reflect what we're feeling emotionally, and it's electromagnetic, then our heart waves interfere with each other. Okay, so right now, you know, people say, I went to this holy shrine and I felt lots of peace. Or I went into this room, there was a lot of stress. And nobody said a word. Why? Because our heart biofields are the electromagnetic fields that radiate from our heart, influence people around us. So when you are a peaceful, loving being, you don't even say anything. Your very presence influences other people. Very presence. Thanks for asking that question. Yes, over here, please.
So I have something that I struggle with. How do you find peacefulness and happiness in the world that is, you know, full of wars and hunger? You know, scientists say that we have entered era of extinction due to global warming, pollution, and the stress of global resources. So how can you still be happy and peaceful knowing that? And also, do you think that is there anything that we can do to change our destiny?
Well, there are only two responses. One is we're screwed. Okay? So let's stop discussing this. Let's go have a drink. Okay? That's one response. The two is, what else is there to do other than make people happy around you, you know? So pick 2-3 people every day, make them happy. And it's not difficult. I say the 3 A's. The 3 A's, attention, affection, appreciation. Attention means just listen to them. Appreciation means notice something good about them. And affection means tell them you care about them. And, you know, make 2 people happy every day, let them make 2 other people happy, and let's create a pandemic of happiness globally. And we can even do it. Okay, so last question.
I get the last question. I hope it makes sense. You mentioned at the beginning of your talk when you were talking about your grandson and dark energy that in India you believe in, the Indian culture believes in reincarnation. And I've always been very interested in past life regression and am now interested in that subject, in reincarnation. I'd like to know what your thoughts are about that and if you believe that, to try to tie it into what we're talking about, if the way we nourish our cells now will impact how we would move into a new form.
Okay, so this is a very controversial subject, but here's what you do. Google Dr. Ian Stevenson. Ian Stevenson, he's from the University of Virginia, and he's no longer with us, but his department is still very active, and they do a lot of research on reincarnation, and you'll find it all on the internet. Ian Stevenson. And they've documented literally thousands of children who remember other lifetimes, including facts that they could have not known. A 4-year-old kid talking about being a pilot in the Second World War, having the plane shot down, remembering the number, remembering the name of the co-pilots, etc. Say, why isn't it more common? Apparently, it's very common very early in life, but by 3 or 4 years, the kids lose their memories. But I'm not going to say anything more about it. You can do your own research. Ian Stevenson, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.